You're in the College Health Center seeing Quentin Samuels, an 18-year-old college freshman. Quentin is concerned that he's having more problems with his asthma since he's been at college. He's been using his albuterol inhaler more frequently, and he wakes up nightly with wheezing and coughing, which does respond well to two puffs, but he's concerned he's going to run out of medication soon. On exam, Quentin has scattered wheezes in both his lungs. His peak flow is 70% of predicted and goes up to 85% of predicted after two puffs from an albuterol inhaler. As you consider his worsening symptoms, you wonder, what additional medications could you consider to help him get his asthma under more optimal control? Consider your answers as we begin this next episode. Welcome to AudioBricks. I'm Adam Weinstein, bringing respiratory medicine from our bricks to your ears. After completing this episode, you'll be able to 1. Discuss the features and general approaches to managing asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. 2. Describe the indications, mechanisms, and adverse effects of the drug classes that are used in the treatment of asthma. And 3. Describe the indications, mechanisms, and adverse effects of the drug classes that are used in the treatment of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Part 1. Features and general approaches to management of asthma and COPD. Asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, which includes emphysema and chronic bronchitis, are both chronic obstructive lung diseases that result in a narrowing of airways. While asthma and COPD do share some features, they also differ in important ways. Asthma is caused by a reversible airway obstruction triggered by a combination of bronchial hyperreactivity, airway inflammation, and bronchial smooth muscle hypertrophy. Asthma exacerbations may present with shortness of breath, cough, wheezing, and a prolonged expiratory phase. Patients often describe a tightness in their airways that makes it hard to breathe. Asthma may be triggered by viruses or environmental exposures such as cold air or chemical pollutants, and unlike COPD, asthma is often exacerbated by specific triggers such as allergens. On the other hand, COPD is due to an irreversible damage to the lungs, in particular, narrowing and inflammation of the airways. This damage is caused by recurrent and ongoing exposure to irritants, most commonly cigarette smoking. Symptoms may be similar to asthma, with shortness of breath, wheezing, and chronic cough, but additionally, especially with chronic bronchitis, there is often a productive cough with a lot of mucus. The goals of treatment for both asthma and COPD are to reduce symptoms, prevent exacerbations, and maintain quality of life. Pharmacologic approaches work to increase airway diameter and reduce inflammation and/or mucus, causing narrowing and obstruction. Because asthma symptoms can result from environmental and allergic triggers as well, these patients may also be treated with specific drugs targeting the allergic response. Let's review these general features with a question. Can you name some differences between asthma and COPD? Asthma is a reversible airway narrowing and may have specific triggers, such as allergens, whereas COPD is irreversible narrowing of the airway and is caused by more general irritants to the lung, most commonly cigarette smoke. Also, patients with one type of COPD, chronic bronchitis, often have a productive cough with mucus, and this is also different from asthma. Part 2. What medications are used to treat asthma? The pathophysiology of asthma includes both bronchoconstriction and an inflammatory response, so the treatments include bronchodilators, such as beta-2 agonists, anti-muscarinic agents, methylxanthines, and anti-inflammatory medications, such as corticosteroids, chromolyn sodium, and leukotriene inhibitors. Let's first discuss the bronchodilators. Beta-2 adrenergic agonists are the most commonly used bronchodilators. They work by stimulating the beta-2 receptors found on airway smooth muscle, which causes relaxation of these muscles and airway dilation. The beta-2 receptor is a G-protein-coupled receptor. When stimulated, it activates adenyl cyclase, producing cyclic adenosine monophosphate, or CAMP, cyclic AMP, and through subsequent cellular responses, this leads to smooth muscle relaxation. Beta-2 adrenergic agonists are divided into short-acting agonists and long-acting agonists. Short-acting beta-2 agonists are first-line agents for acute asthma exacerbations and are very effective in the short term. They should not be used chronically, as eventually responsiveness may be diminished over time, potentially related to changes in receptor expression. This makes me concerned about our patient Quentin, as he seems to be using his albuterol inhaler every day and night now. An example of a short-acting beta-2 agonist is albuterol. And albuterol is generally well-tolerated, though patients commonly experience mild adverse reactions such as rapid heart rate and skeletal muscle tremors. More significantly, higher doses and exposures may lead to hypokalemia and diastolic hypotension. Long-acting beta-2 agonists are not used for acute exacerbations, and rather are used as adjunct therapy alongside inhaled glucocorticoids for asthma patients with moderate to severe symptoms that are inadequately controlled with inhaled glucocorticoids alone. They should not be prescribed as monotherapy, as when used alone, they have been associated with life-threatening asthma attacks and death, whereas if used in combination with an inhaled glucocorticoid, they have proved to be effective. Examples of long-acting beta-2 agonists are salmeterol and formoterol. Since they are long-acting and not effective for acute events, these beta-2 agonists are administered daily or twice daily to prevent asthma exacerbations and symptoms. Adverse reactions are similar to those for short-acting beta-2 agonists. Muscarinic antagonists are another class of medications that may be used for asthma that also assist in bronchodilation. These work by competitively blocking muscarinic receptors, specifically the M3 receptor, on the airway smooth muscles. They make it so acetylcholine in the neuromuscular junction cannot bind to airway smooth muscle M3 receptors, preventing bronchoconstriction. These medications are also divided into long-acting and short-acting classes. A common short-acting muscarinic antagonist agent is ipratropium, and a long-acting muscarinic antagonist is tiotropium. Antimuscarinic agents are more commonly used in the treatment of COPD and are not used as first-line bronchodilators for patients with asthma. However, ipratropium is used in emergency department settings as an adjunct therapy along with beta-2 agonists for acute asthma exacerbations. Adverse effects include headache, dizziness, nausea, and dry mouth, essentially similar side effects as seen with systemically administered anticholinergic agents. The last class of bronchodilator we'll discuss are the methylxanthines. These include theophylline, as well as its well-known close relative, caffeine. Methylxanthines are phosphodiesterase inhibitors and adenosine receptor antagonists. Both mechanisms promote airway smooth muscle relaxation and bronchodilation. The former mechanism works through stabilization of cyclic AMP and inhibition of its breakdown by phosphodiesterases to AMP. Adenosine acts on bronchial smooth muscle as a bronchoconstrictor, therefore antagonizing the adenosine receptor also prevents bronchoconstriction. Methylxanthines are typically added to the regimen only after other agents have failed and are not considered first-line or even second-line agents because of their side effects. In fact, because of a risk for fatal arrhythmias and seizures, these agents are now only rarely, if ever, used. More mild adverse effects include tremor and tachycardia. Notably, theophylline is metabolized by the cytochrome P450 system, so it is also associated with many potential drug-drug interactions. Before moving on, let's break for a question. Can you name the three classes of bronchodilators used in asthma, and which one is considered first line for acute exacerbations? Beta-2 receptor agonists, muscarinic antagonists, and methylxanthines are the three classes of bronchodilators used in asthma, and beta-2 receptor agonists are used as first-line agents for acute exacerbations. Let's now discuss anti-inflammatory medications used to treat asthma. Corticosteroids are very effective agents in managing asthma. Systemic corticosteroids are typically given in addition to short-acting beta-2 agonists for moderate to severe acute exacerbations, and are used to reduce the inflammatory response triggering the escalation and bronchoconstriction. Unfortunately, because of long-term side effects, systemic corticosteroids are only given on a short-term basis. On the other hand, inhaled corticosteroids are also effective, and these are given as the first-line treatment for long-term asthma symptom control and to prevent exacerbations. Some examples of inhaled corticosteroids include beclomethasone, budesonide, and fluticasone. When prescribed for long-term asthma control, inhaled corticosteroids need to be taken regularly, even in the absence of asthma symptoms. The goal of these medications is to prevent symptoms and exacerbations from developing, as these are less effective at treating an exacerbation once it's developed. The most significant adverse effects specific to inhaled corticosteroid use are hoarse voice and oral candidiasis. Some studies also suggest that inhaled corticosteroids can have some systemic absorption and similar side effects to systemic glucocorticoids, although these effects are both milder and less common compared to their systemically administered glucocorticoid counterparts. Now, let's pause again for a review question. Can you name some adverse effects specific to inhaled corticosteroids? A hoarse voice and oral candidiasis are common adverse effects seen with inhaled corticosteroid use. Now, as I mentioned earlier, asthma attacks may also be triggered through allergic stimuli. Therefore, asthma may also be treated with medications that inhibit the allergic response. The leukotriene inhibitors make up a class of drugs that alleviate asthma symptoms by inhibiting the actions of leukotrienes, a group of potent inflammatory mediators active in the allergic response. Members of this class include montelukast, zafirlukast, and xylutan. Montelukast and zafirlukast work by blocking the cysteinyl leukotriene receptor, which is usually activated by leukotrienes. Xylutan inhibits leukotriene production by inhibiting lipoxygenase. Leukotriene inhibitors are now used similarly to inhaled corticosteroids and are first-line therapies for long-term control of moderate to severe asthma, especially in those with allergic triggers. They can also be used prophylactically before exposure to a known asthma trigger. For example, if cat allergy triggers your asthma, and you are visiting your aunt and uncle who have a cat. Leukotriene inhibitors, especially montelukast and zafirlukast, are safe and well-tolerated, with minimal side effects. Xylutan is typically well-tolerated, too, but may be associated with hepatotoxicity. Mast cell stabilizers are another anti-inflammatory drug class used to treat asthma. They work by preventing the degranulation of mast cells and release of allergic response mediators such as histamine. Chromalin sodium is an example of a mast cell stabilizer used for the treatment of asthma. Like leukotriene inhibitors, mast cell stabilizers can be used prophylactically before exposure to a known asthma trigger, or they can be used as long-term maintenance therapy to prevent asthma exacerbations. Chromalin sodium inhalants do not have significant adverse effects, but they can occasionally cause throat irritation and cough. They are now used much less commonly, if at all, for the treatment of asthma, as the convenience of the leukotriene inhibitors, a daily pill rather than inhaled medication, and their safety profile have replaced chromalin's role in therapy. Part 3. What medications are used to treat COPD? Patients with COPD respond to many of the same medications used to treat asthma. Patients with mild COPD and minimal symptoms usually do not require long-term therapy, and short-acting bronchodilators as needed for symptoms are sufficient treatments. One difference between COPD and asthma is that both short-acting beta agonists and short-acting anti-muscarinic agents are very effective in COPD, and either or both are used with COPD, whereas short-acting beta-2 agonists are the mainstay for treating acute asthma symptoms. For patients with more symptomatic COPD, long-acting beta-2 agonists, long-acting anti-muscarinic agents, and inhaled corticosteroids are used in combination, much like for asthma, except for the anti-muscarinic agents, to reduce symptoms, prevent exacerbations, and improve quality of life. As with asthma, patients with moderate to severe COPD exacerbations may also be treated with a short course of systemic corticosteroids to reduce the inflammatory response triggering the escalation and the bronchoconstriction. There is one additional class of medication used for COPD, specifically for patients with chronic bronchitis. Patients with chronic bronchitis often have thick and viscous secretions, exacerbated by their compromised cilia function, resulting in a chronic productive cough. Therefore, expectorants are often used to help clear these secretions and reduce the severity of the cough and the airway obstruction. Two of the commonly used expectorants are guaifenesin and N-acetylcysteine. Guaifenesin helps clear secretions by increasing the volume and reducing the viscosity of mucus, making it easier for the impaired cilia to carry the loosened mucus upward toward the pharynx. On the other hand, N-acetylcysteine is technically considered a mucolytic. In other words, it dissolves the mucus rather than dilutes it, like guaifenesin. The three-dimensional network that forms mucus contains disulfide bonds, and these can be reduced by the sulfhydryl group in N-acetylcysteine. Once reduced, the bonds no longer participate in cross-linking in the mucus network, thereby lowering the mucus viscosity. Both medications are generally well-tolerated, and their most common side effects are gastrointestinal. Guaifenesin has been associated with nausea and vomiting, and less commonly, kidney stones. N-acetylcysteine commonly leads to gastrointestinal side effects such as stomatitis, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and/or constipation, and less commonly, hypotension. Let's complete this section with a review question. What gives N-acetylcysteine its mucolytic property? If you said the sulfhydryl groups, you are correct. These disrupt the disulfide bonds in mucus, thereby lowering the viscosity of the mucus. And that's all I have today for drugs to treat asthma and COPD. Let's see if we've completed our goals for this episode. Can you discuss the features and general approaches to managing asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease? Both asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease are obstructive lung diseases characterized by reduced airflow due to narrowing of the airway. For both COPD and asthma, bronchodilators and anti-inflammatories can be used to increase the airway diameter, reduce airway inflammation, and alleviate airway obstruction. Next, can you describe the indications, mechanism of action, and adverse effects of beta-2 adrenergic agonists that are used in the treatment of asthma and COPD? Beta-2 agonists cause bronchodilation by stimulating the beta-2 receptors found on the bronchial smooth muscles. Short-acting beta-2 agonists are considered first-line agents for acute asthma exacerbations and COPD exacerbations. Long-acting beta-2 agonists are considered second-line agents that may be used together with inhaled corticosteroids for long-term control. Common side effects include tachycardia and tremor. Can you describe the indications, mechanism of action, and adverse effects of antimuscarinic agents that are used in the treatment of asthma and COPD? Muscarinic antagonists block the muscarinic receptors on the bronchial smooth muscles and prevent bronchoconstriction. They are considered first-line agents together with beta-2 agonists in COPD, but are only used less commonly and as adjunct agents in an emergency department setting for acute exacerbations of asthma. Common side effects are similar to systemic anticholinergic agents like dry mouth and headache and dizziness. Okay, now, can you describe the indications and mechanism of action of anti-inflammatory medications that are used in the treatment of asthma and COPD? Systemic corticosteroids may be given in moderate to severe exacerbations for a short course to reduce the inflammatory trigger of the bronchoconstriction and hyperreactivity. Inhaled corticosteroids are first-line agents that are used long-term to reduce and limit the inflammatory process, preventing relapses and exacerbations. Leukotriene inhibitors block the cystinyl leukotriene receptor, or the production of leukotrienes, limiting the allergic inflammatory response, and they may be used long-term, like inhaled corticosteroids, to prevent relapses and exacerbations. And lastly, Can you describe the indications, mechanism of action, and adverse effects of the expectorants used to treat chronic bronchitis? Expectorants such as guaifenesin and N-acetylcysteine are used to help patients clear thick mucus. Guaifenesin works by diluting the mucus, and N-acetylcysteine by dissolving it. The most common side effects are gastrointestinal, like nausea and vomiting. Armed with your newfound knowledge of the drugs to treat asthma and COPD, let's revisit our patient's story from the beginning of this episode. If you recall, our patient Quentin is an 18-year-old college freshman who has been using his albuterol inhaler more frequently, including every night for nighttime wheezing and coughing episodes. On exam, he has scattered wheezes in both lungs and a reduced peak flow rate, which improves after two puffs from an albuterol inhaler. As you consider his worsening symptoms, you wonder, what additional medications could you consider to help him get his asthma under more optimal control? You recognize that Quentin's asthma symptoms now appear to be under suboptimal control. Short-acting beta-2 agonists like albuterol are ideally used as rescue therapy and only intermittently rather than chronically and daily as Quentin is needing it. We suspect this may be due to a new environmental trigger at his college, perhaps new pollens or dust or molds in his college dorm room. To gain better control of his now persistent asthma symptoms, we give him a short 5-day course of systemic corticosteroids and have Quentin begin an inhaled corticosteroid twice daily to continue long-term, even when he's not having any asthma symptoms. You see Quentin back a few months later and he confirms that he's feeling great. He's been playing intramural ultimate frisbee and he has only needed his albuterol once or twice in the last month. And that's all I have for the drugs to treat asthma and COPD. Thanks for joining me. If you like this episode, give it a thumbs up or a comment. You can enjoy the full Rick experience online at www.usmle-rx.com. Complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. Stay healthy out there.